नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the sixth canto, chapter 12, entitled Vritasura's Glorious Death. And this is text 16. Pashyamam nirjitam shatru vriknayudha bhujam ridhe gatamanam yata shakti tava prana jihirshaya pashyamam nirjitam shatru vriknayudha bhujam ridhe ghatamanam yata shakti tava prana jihirshaya Pasya, look, mam, at me, nirjitam, already defeated, shatru, O enemy, vrikana, cut off, ayudha, my weapon, bhujam, and my arm, mridhe, in this fight, ghatamanam, still trying, yata shakti, according to my ability, tava, of you, prana, the life, jihirshaya, with the desire to take away. Translation, O my enemy, just look at me. I have already been defeated, for my weapon and arm have been cut to pieces. You have already overwhelmed me, but nonetheless, with a desire to kill you, I'm trying my best to fight. I'm not at all morose, even under such adverse conditions. Therefore, you should give up your moroseness and continue fighting. Please repeat, O my enemy, just look at me. I have already been defeated, for my weapon and arm have been cut to pieces. You have already overwhelmed me, but nonetheless, with a desire to kill you, I am trying my best to fight. I am not at all morose, even under such adverse conditions. Therefore, you should give up your moroseness and continue fighting. Purport. Vritasura was so great and powerful that, in effect, he was acting as the spiritual master of Indra. Although Vritasura was on the verge of defeat, he was not at all affected. He knew that he was going to be defeated by Indra, and he voluntarily accepted that. But since he was supposed to be Indra's enemy, he tried his best to kill Indra. Thus he performed his duty. One should perform his duty under all circumstances, even though one may know what the result will be. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshul Unmilitam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So it's a wonderful pastime because it's extremely complex. And we may see the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam, the purpose of the Bhagavatam, who is it for? What's its intention? What's the audience? So it was primarily compiled for the residents of Kali Yuga. So it includes the departure of Lord Krishna and shortly after the activities of Maharaj Parikshit in the age of Kali. So we know that Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was the preacher of the Amal Purana, or Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the primary literature that Lord Chaitanya spoke about, was influenced by, and recommended the study of. And in fact, all the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are all students of the Bhagavatam. Devotees of Lord Chaitanya get their inspiration from Bhagavatam. And in fact, Narottam Das Thakur, he says that his happiness is reading Srimad Bhagavatam. That's his sense gratification. So you may say, well, Bhagavatam existed for 5,000 years before the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it was also for those people too, before Lord Chaitanya. But the percentage of people in the world who are actually able to enter into Srimad Bhagavatam before the appearance of Lord Chaitanya were relatively small. Relatively small. And we accept that the Bhagavatam is not only going to be embraced now, or has been since the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it's going to become the literature which will give light to the world, the whole world, for 10,000 years, in fact. So you could argue that Srimad Bhagavatam was composed primarily for that audience. That's the more, if you take a look at the numbers, you can say that that's actually the purpose of the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam, is for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see that, indeed, primarily what the Bhagavatam teaches, the threads throughout are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. There's special emphasis put on the position of the holy name of the Lord. This is found throughout the entire Bhagavatam, both on the surface and also internally. If you read between the lines, the holy name is always being discussed. And another theme, if you think about when the Lord appears, he comes and he annihilates the demons. When Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, he says that here's the devotees and here's the demons. And when Lord Ram comes, he primarily kills the demons. So now there are instances with the Lord's avatars that perhaps a demon, a demonic individual, is given some mercy. Like there's a few cases in Ramayana where some of those on the side of Ravana develop a relationship with Ram. But it's not primarily the conversion of the demons, is not really the agenda of any other avatar except Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's really something amazing that Lord Krishna, in his appearance of Lord Chaitanya, he is giving Krishna consciousness to the demons, to demonic personalities. So it's something wonderful, because traditionally the demons are not ones that receive the mercy of the Lord. The demons are opposed to the Lord. But Lord Chaitanya comes and he takes the demonic and he turns them into the best devotees. So that theme also is found through Srimad Bhagavatam, how the external activities or varna or caste or birth of an individual at the end of the day is irrelevant. So this you'll find throughout the Leelas, you'll find that it knocks down all preconception that we may have. And generally, the Vedic literatures in general, and specifically Krishna, his pastimes tend to also illustrate that. Sometimes that Vedic culture is accused of being patriarchal, you know, unfair to women, with an overemphasis on men. But we see in the Mahabharata that the woman, the hero, the heroic women, like Kunti, she's the boss of the Pandavas. The Pandavas are extremely powerful men in every sphere, but they're submissive to Kunti. And she is the one who runs the show. She decides what is to be done. she's worshipable. And Draupadi, she's married to all five of them. So normally in traditional stories we have, you know, we'll have a king who has many wives who are submissive and gentle and meek. But here the woman has the five men as her husband. So this turns everything on its head. This is not the story of a culture which is promoting patriarchal ideas. This would be a very dangerous pastime to hold up as worshipable and instruction, and didactic, meaning giving instruction. It'd be very dangerous. But the Vedas, it doesn't care. Vedic literature just gives the truth. So here we have this very dangerous story of a woman having five husbands. Right? So this is not the creation of a culture that has an agenda against either gender. So constantly the Vedas are defying our expectation of what we expect because it's transcendental. And at the end of the day, there's no difference, there's no discrimination. Ultimately, the only real truth is our relationship, our identity as a servant of Krishna. That's the only reality. And there is no happiness in this world. If you identify with this world, then you are unhappy. Unhappiness is the result. And if you look to the glow that comes from the Vaikuntha, like we chant in Gayatri Mantra three times a day, that the Brahmins, they see the rays from the spiritual world. They're able to perceive the light that comes from the kingdom of God, and therefore they can convey it to others. It's not of this world. Spiritual truth does not take birth in the Bhavasagara, but it comes, it's from some other place, and it appears. And it's only by looking to that light are you delivered. And if you're in this world, you get illusion and trouble. And you're cheated. How much trouble Indra got in? So now we have, first he's knocked back, and Vritrasura is telling him, okay, recover yourself. Pick up your weapon. Get yourself together. And now Indra's recovering from the blow, but now he's realizing that this is self-realization, that what he's hearing is divine transcendental knowledge. So when Maharaj Rahugana, when he initially spoke a little roughly to Judd Bharat, then he realized that Judd Bharat spoke transcendental knowledge, and the king got off his palanquin and offered obeisances and said, I'm not scared of, the Lord of Death or all the weapons or the different demons, but I am scared of offending a Brahmana. And he immediately closed his mouth and he started to listen to Judd Bharat with great respect, because when he heard transcendental knowledge coming from the mouth of Judd Bharat, then the king knew this is serious. This is self-realization, and I have to worship it. I have to listen, open my ears. So this is the situation of Indra. He's hearing transcendental knowledge from a source that he wasn't expecting, like Maharaj Rahugana. So naturally, as a devotee and as a king, he must offer worship and listen. But he can't. He has to kill the individual who is speaking the spiritual message. So this goes against everything that he knows. So this is, how did he get in this situation? This was, it would have been very easy if he would just have offered worship to his spiritual master. If he'd just gotten off the throne and shown a little respect for Brihaspati, he could have avoided this very bad situation. But this is the effect of sin, is that it creates unhappiness that we can't anticipate. You can't possibly imagine the bad effects when you do something bad. You do something bad, you don't simply get the reaction of the bad thing, but it creates more badness, and more badness, and more badness. And you go deeper and deeper into illusion. And Krishna says, yes, that is my arrangement. Those that go against me, I cast them further, deeper. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that Krishna personally places you, but he's created the laws and the dynamics of this machine that we exist in, that you do something bad, you go deeper into badness. So it's very scary. But the good news is that conversely, when you do something good, many, many good things spring from that, that you're unexpected, that you can't foresee. Auspiciousness creates further auspiciousness. And Krishna tells Arjuna, yes, indeed, one who does good is never overcome by evil. So when we do something good, then we don't see what that will create, what benefit we'll get, what the reactions, the ripple effects are coming. So Indra is in such a bad situation because he's made a number of bad decisions. And it's gone, and it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse for him. Have he just done, they say in English, a stitch in time saves nine. So what that means is that you have a piece of cloth that's tearing. If you wait, it comes apart, and maybe you can't fix it. But if you stitch that early, then it'll save the cloth, and it won't get destroyed. So, like Chanakya Pandit said, what is to be done in the afternoon should be done in the morning. And what should be done in the evening should be done in the afternoon. That if we're proactive in our goodness and our devotional life, it reaps so much saving of time. But like we heard, I mentioned in the last class that Ravana was saying before he left his body, that the nature of this world is we rush towards what's not good for us, the bad. We're attracted. And we delay, we procrastinate what is good. It's a feature of this world. It's very unfortunate and very inauspicious. Is that because, in essence, the material world is just a manifestation of our dislike and our rejection of Krishna. So it's just a very bad thing. It's a very bad place. It just creates badness. And even you can be like Indra, who was a Vaishnav. But because he was focused on material, he's affected by Rajaguna, he's always in trouble. He's always getting in difficulty. Even though he's a god, he's the god of the world. Being a king in this planet is a very enviable position, no doubt. But imagine you're king of the world. Vishnu is your doorkeeper. And everything is that all the devas are worshiping you. But he's having such a bad time. He makes many bad decisions. So what is the message here? The message is the material world is a very bad place. And you will get very bad advice. Even when Indra kills Vritrasura, and now he's killed a Brahmana. So he goes to his priests, he's advised what to do. So we'll see in a few shlokas, the priests say that actually chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu delivers one from the worst type of sin and can be done by anybody. Right? But then they say, but that can be done by the lowest class of person, the holy name of Lord Vishnu. But you are a high class Vaishnav. So we're recommending a special Ashwamedha sacrifice in order to atone for the sin of killing. So, you know, it was going in a very good direction. The priests were talking about the holy name, which the Bhagavatam always returns to. But they said, but. So that's the problem. Why didn't they say, so you just simply immerse yourself now in the chanting of the names of Lord Vishnu. This is our direction to. But it wasn't. It was through yajna, sacrifice, you'll atone, and you can happily return to your position of enjoyment. Because one who chants the holy name of Lord Vishnu does not return to their position of enjoyment. The Lord takes personal charge of that devotee, and he takes everything from them. He shows them the horrible, horrible, cruel, unkind face of the material world. So that's why, as devotees, we may not get what we think. I remember I joined ISKCON at the Detroit Temple, and it's a beautiful Fisher mansion. It's a very opulent temple. Ambarish Prabhu purchased it, and at that time, he was giving money for its upkeep. So there was one Indian devotee from Gujarat who's now temple president there. His name's Jagat Guru. And Ambarish Prabhu brought many beautiful items from India to decorate this mansion. So one of the items he bought was this beautiful old deity of Lord Shiva, like you've never seen. It was white marble, and Shiva was sitting like this with some mala, with a gorgeous face, so nice. And we had it there in the temple. It wasn't worship, but it was, you know, nicely put. And this devotee, Jagat Guru, who's an astrologer, comes from a Brahmin, Trivedi is his last name. That's his last name. So he's from very good Brahmin caste from Gujarat. And he said to me once, "You see this deity of Lord Shiva?" He said, "If we actually worship this deity, if this temple decided to just worship this beautiful deity and worship it with the same cleanliness and devotion and strictness and opulence that we worshiped Radha Krishna," he said, "you wouldn't believe how much money we would have. Our opulence would be inconceivable." So that's the difference. When you worship Krishna, he's not like a demigod. It's not a business transaction. He doesn't say, "Oh, you've given me a nice thing, so I will give you this." Krishna doesn't do that. He's moved by devotion. He's touched by it. It's not a business transaction. He's touched by the love. And what is the result? He loves us back even further. So what does he do? He says, I'm not going to give you this dirty place and become further an illusion. Why I do like that? I'm taking you home to play with me so we can really spend time together. Because I accept what you did for me as sincere. You love me, so I'm going to love you back and take you back with me. You're mine now. But that doesn't mean things go well materially. And many times in devotional life we experience that we're exposed to the world. Our ugliness is exposed for everyone to see. Jai Shishi Gornitai, Shishi Krishna Balaram, Lalita Vishaka Shri Radhe Sham. And we're shown the unkind, ugly face of this world so that we don't put any faith in it. So that's Krishna. He delivers the most elevated, wonderful, highest thing. And that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, is that he delivers the message of Vairagya to his followers. This is what Lord Chaitanya teaches. This is unique about Lord Chaitanya. And who are the primary disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? The six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And they lived a life of pure renunciation. Pure renunciation and pure ecstasy. Pure happiness. So this is what the followers of Mahaprabhu ultimately have to embody. This is the difficulty. This is the challenge. Is that at the end of the day, we have to say goodbye to this world. And whatever ashram you're in requires the same vairagya. Now, indeed, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya himself, he said to the Kurma Brahmana that he met in Kurukshetra, just near Vishakhapatnam, still visit that temple today. You know, the Grihastha was like, I'm suffering in an ocean of misery as a Grihastha. So let me come with you. I want to go on Pariyatra and join you. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Don't speak like this, you know. If you just take care of your family, chant Hare Krishna, and speak on Srimad Bhagavatam at home, then you'll never lose my association. I will never leave you." So that sounds very attractive, that, okay, well, there it is. Grihastha ashram, bona fide. You know, Lord Chaitanya said. But to be a Krishna conscious Grihastha is not a very easy thing. Very difficult. In fact, you could argue that being a renunciate is easier than being a Krishna conscious Grihastha. Because you have to have the same realization as a sadhu, but you have all facility to be in Maya. But you can't. So it's a superior consciousness that's required to actually survive. So that those that are grihasthas, that in the grihastha ashram, that are in good Krishna conscious shape, they are worshipable. But it is a great challenge. It is a great challenge. Because generally, especially in the Western world, those of us who were brahmacharis and decided to get married didn't do it out of a sense of duty. In India, there's a sense you get married not because you decided you wanted to enjoy. You did it because your mother and father expect you to. You do it out of duty. And that's a very different consciousness. That's a very different consciousness. In the West, it's not like that. Everyone is free. We're detached from our family and we live our own lives. And so even, you know, duty is also the message of the Vedas, is that one acts according to one's duty. So in the Western world, those that joined ISKCON in the West, they became married because essentially they couldn't make it as a brahmachari. That's the reason you get married as a Western Hare Krishna. That because Prabhupada said, don't do it. Don't do it. If they were already associating, Prabhupada said, okay, I have to marry you now. You know, like the early grihasthas. Because there was such intermingling. Prabhupada said, you can't do this as brahmachari, brahmacharini. So you all get married. And none of the marriages really survived, to be honest, from those early days. The great grihastha souls that did so much preaching, the marriages didn't last because it was a convention for the moment, because it was necessary. Like Prabhupada said, he was giving battlefield commission to the young sannyasis. And their sannyas also didn't last, primarily. So it was time and circumstance. But the actual way to be a grihastha is not because you're agitated. It is because it's a sense of duty. And the standard of Krishna consciousness in the grihastha ashram to survive is just inconceivably high. It says in the Garuda Purana that a devotee of Vishnu, while he's conceiving a child, during intercourse, he should think how Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. This is Garuda Purana. So someone may say, you know, that seems a little much. I'm doing all my Krishna conscious activity. I'm chanting my rounds. I'm being a good boy. I'm following. But this is my moment. This is the indulgence which is permitted to me. This is the license. This is the licit moment. This is my time now. I'm doing everything right. I followed Garbhadang Sanskar strictly. We chanted 50 rounds. So this is my moment. And in fact, I remember when I was a grihastha previously, I'm vanaprast now, a devotee sent me some scriptures from different Vedas talking about conception and was saying how you feed the wife and the wife feeds you, and you wear garlands and have chandan on, and one should be actually attractive and have some, you know, but that's not what the Vaishnav scriptures say. That during the act, one should meditate on how Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So is that going to affect your enjoyment of that moment? Of course. How could it not? You're thinking that Krishna is actually the enjoyer. And the Shastras say, that's the meditation, if you really want the act to be fruit. So even that, you can't enjoy. So how high the standard is of a Krishna conscious grihastha. It's like you're a sannyasi, you're better than a sannyasi. Because you have, you know, Hayagriva in his Hare Krishna explosion, when Prabhupada was explaining to the early devotees the consciousness of the grihastha ashram, Hayagriva said, it's like having a feast, but you can't eat it. Prabhupada said, yes. And he said, forget it. It's better to forget it. Prabhupada's like, that's the idea. So this is the material world. There is no enjoyment for you. You try to play the game. You try to rig it so that you can have some fun. It doesn't work. You can't. So, you know, obviously we need an army of Krishna-conscious householders for ISKCON to expand. So what a high standard. What a high standard. It's beyond comprehension. So that's the message of the Bhagavatam, is that you have to be a devotee. It doesn't matter what your environment is, that you have to be detached. You have to be a Paramahansa. Vritrasura is an Asura Paramahansa. He's a demon Paramahansa, essentially. He's taking the essence, and he's remembering the Lord, and he's supremely detached. So it's the Paramahansa Sanghita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the preacher of this Amul Purana. And Lord Chaitanya said the standard is very high. You have to have the highest understanding and highest standard of Vairagya and renunciation. So we're asked a lot. We're asked a lot. And the Lord came in Bhagavad Gita and spoke Bhagavad Gita. And essentially, Krishna told us the truth in Bhagavad Gita. He said, I am this, you are that, this will happen to you. If you do this, this will happen to you. If you don't do this, basically, the Gita is the truth. It's the explanation of who God is, who we are, what is devotional service, what is material activity, what is the result of you engaging in material activity. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is the application. It's the application of what Krishna spoke in Bhagavad Gita. What is the actual result of the understanding? What does it mean for us practically in the world? And what are the troubles? What are the trials? What are the things that can happen when we try to approach Lord Krishna according to his instructions of Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavatam is the application of the teachings of the Gita. Krishna doesn't give the anecdotal study of the truth of Krishna consciousness. That's the Bhagavatam. So it's very relevant for us. We can get great direction. And it's again and again pointing us in the direction of where we're supposed to go. And we see the Bhagavatam is teaching that it's not enough to be pious. Piety fails. Sukriti and Punya will fail you. It's not enough. It's not enough. It's bhakti, which is the only thing which will save us. Punya simply brings you back to this world to be entangled again. It brings beautiful things, objects of enjoyment, and we become mad. We forget God. Even if it's refined, it's not what you want. Lord Chaitanya did not come to teach how to enjoy in this world. He taught you have to be ultimately detached. You have to have complete understanding that anything that's temporary will not give you satisfaction. Forget it. So it's appropriate, perhaps, that Lord Chaitanya, he's giving the highest thing. He's giving the means by which to return to Goloka Vrindavan, the highest planet, the highest association, to become God's personal friend. In all the other 999 Divya Yugas of the day of Brahma, we don't even know about Vrindavan. It's hidden. There's no chance to go back to Goloka. You go to Vaikuntha, that's as high as you go. In the other 999 Divya Yugas in the day of Brahma, there is no scope for going back to Goloka. Why? What's the proof? It's because the only way you can go back to Goloka Vrindavan is through Raganuga Bhakti, which we are practicing, Raganuga Sadhana. It means you think about the activity of a member in the spiritual world. The only way to go back to Goloka is you meditate on the service of a perfected devotee. And you develop a hankering, an aspiration to love Krishna like that. Of course, there's sadhana and there's diksha and there's the purifying and formalizing, you know, activities connected to that. But that ultimately is what it is. And Prabhupada says this clearly in the Nectar of Devotion, that one must develop an attachment to a resident of Vrindavan and follow in the footsteps of that devotee. That's unavoidable. You can't do it. So where is that? If Krishna doesn't come in that particular Divya Yuga, it means there's no display of his loving devotee. So you can't, you don't know. So you can't follow. Your heart can't become attracted. So you go to Vaikuntha. And of course, Vaikuntha is not such a bad place. But as devotees, we don't want to go. We don't desire to go to Vaikuntha, which is an amazing thing. How is that possible? Don't want to go to Vaikuntha? It's the highest thing obtainable. But what Lord Chaitanya gives is just so inconceivably amazing that his followers aren't even interested to go to Vaikuntha. How is that possible? This is the lure of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering. So you come back, you go to the highest realm. Even God in the material world, he comes, he does his duty. But even in the spiritual world, there is a place that's very secret. Beyond Vaikuntha, where Krishna really, really lets his hair down. And he keeps his really good friends, his super close friends. In Vaikuntha, yes, they're Vishnu's friends. You can't assail it. But Vrindavan is something even special. He really lets his hair down, and he's himself with those he trusts. His intimate, intimate, where he can be himself, who he really wants to be. But if you want this, then you must look very down your nose at this world. You want to be a follower of Lord Chaitanya and go to Goloka, then you can't have any affection for this place. It's impossible. It's incompatible. And that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching here in this pastime. Is that it's glorious. He's a demon and it's glorious because he's remembering the Lord. So this is the very hard line of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the very hard line that there is no place for you. This is a bad place. And even though you may try to enjoy it as a pious person and have beautiful pious children and a pious wife and give charity and do sacrifice, you'll be miserable. You won't be happy. You have to give it up. And even Krishna says that the demon says, I'll give some sacrifice. The demons also do sacrifice. So what is the difference? The demon loves his family and he does yajna. You know, the asuras that we hear about, they're not, even though in like, you know, medieval Indian art, when there's a demon portrayed in asura, they have sharp teeth and fangs and they're very horrible looking and fat and ugly. But that's not really how asuras are. Asuras are very attractive. They're very educated. They're very beautiful. They're very knowledgeable. In the higher planets, it's not that they're, you know, got big animals roasting outside and they're all living like barbarians. It's not like that. You know, the asuras have a very high standard of enjoyment. And the lower, more demonic, more wicked, more shameless, evil demons that are below, their standard of enjoyment is even higher, more beautiful, more attractive materially. So what does that tell you? You have to say goodbye at the end of the day. Anything in this world will cause frustration and misery, won't give satisfaction. But this is very hard because we've been turning our back on Krishna for a million lifetimes. So now to turn towards him and send that all goodbye, it can be a little artificial. It can be a little hard. And then especially since there's so much indirect benefit to bhakti, we may think like, why not cash it in? You know, this is a bit of a shortcut. Make Krishna happy. Do all the things that he likes. and maybe we should get something out of the deal. You know? You mean I'm making God happy and it doesn't translate into some fun down here? That I've never heard that before. I thought that that's the way it works. So even so, Krishna can trick us. Krishna lures us to devotional service because we have these samskaras from previous lives that if you make God happy, you're going to have some fun. You're going to enjoy. So we may initially come to Krishna consciousness, to ISKCON, because we understand God is here. Krishna may reveal to us that he is in his holy name and he is in the deity form. So we become attracted and we think, oh, this is nice. I can, you know, enjoy. A friend of mine, a temple president, once said that we join Krishna consciousness, we join ISKCON, and we think, yes, this is my movement, I'm a Hare Krishna. But he said, then after some time, Krishna reveals that it's actually his movement. And it's what he wants, his agenda, his mission. We are just servants of that. So that can be a little bracing, a little disconcerting. So the losers become winners and the winners become losers. Everything is back to front in Krishna consciousness, which is why it's a challenge. Here we have it, you know, Prabhupada explains in a purport that according to Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur, that Vitrasura was the winner of this conflict. He was the victor. But he's a demon who was killed, and he won, and Indra was the loser. And he retains ultimately his position. Oh, if you don't know, I'll spoil it for you. He ultimately gets back to being Indra, even though he goes through so much difficulty. The sin of Vritrasura, the Brahmin, killing him, and he's not just a Brahmana, he's a wonderful devotee. And the sin takes the form of an old woman whose breath, it said, smelled horribly of fish. You know rotten fish? It's very bad smell. Like a fish market, you walk by a fish market on a hot day, or the rotten fish has been like roasted. It's a horrible smell. So this, an old woman with tuberculosis, you know tuberculosis? You cough up blood. Blood. She's coughing up blood and she smells so bad of fish that a fishy smell fills the whole area where she is. And she's running after Indra, like wanting to embrace him. And blood, her cloth is covered in blood. She's an old wrinkled woman and the fish smell is coming. And she's like, wait, wait, Indra, come back. Don't run away. This is the manifestation of sinful reaction. This is horrible. Old woman covered in blood, smelling like fish, saying, look at, my darling, where are you going? So it's not a very good situation. It's not what he was thinking. This is not the embrace of the beautiful apsaras in the heavenly planets. This is something else. Oh. This is the result. This is what he got. He was trying to, he was immersed in the enjoyment of the beautiful women in the heavenly planets, but this is ultimately what happened. This is the embrace that was coming for him. And he's a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. So what to speak of us? What is our position? So this is a mercy. This is mercy. This is how Krishna shows mercy in this world, is that he gives us a horrible situation, makes us suffer, takes everything away from us. This is throughout the scripture, this is stated. So it can be hard news. It can be a hard message. It kind of ruins everything. When we read the other Puranas, we can hear, oh, you can enjoy. You just do this sacrifice, do this austerity, and you'll enjoy beautiful women and men that smell like lotus flowers with lotus eyes and for millions of years, and all your desires will be fulfilled. And you can drink this beverage, soma, that will make you sensually and intellectually even more powerful and intoxicated. I mean, that sounds pretty good. But Bhagavatam says, no. No, this is not where you're going to go. And it very delicately does it, step by step, before it gets to this point. It shows us the different follies that occur to those that are pursuing heavenly pleasure. So gradually, by the end of the Bhagavatam, we're like, all right, I surrender. Okay, I admit, it's folly. You know, I don't want it. And then when we're at that stage where we see the folly of sense gratification in the material world, then you're eligible to hear the pastimes of Krishna. And you can awaken a taste like that. And then in the 11th canto, Krishna really gets down to it. In the 11th canto, Krishna speaks very frankly to Uddhava. It's like, okay, we've gotten all the illusion out of the way. And you've understood the happiness of my pastimes. What's waiting for you? So then, in the 11th canto, Krishna can really get down to brass tacks. Now we've gotten rid of all of that. I don't have to convince you about the material world. You're a devotee. And that's why the Uddhava Gita is so powerful, because Krishna's getting right down to it. And Krishna says to Uddhava that this life, human life on this planet, is as if we're walking towards our execution. That's what Krishna says the human body is, this life. We are all as if the condemned prisoner walking to his execution. So, what else do you need to hear? How you can enjoy in that kind of environment. But that's the situation. And Marshchitraketu has been blessed that he's in a dying demon body, because there's no chance for him to be bewildered. So it's a gift, it's a blessing, and he's happy. And he's taking the opportunity. And he's saying, go on, kill me. What are you waiting for? Do it. Pull the trigger. And Indra's like, well, if it's easy for you to say, you're going to go back to Godhead. This has all been sanctioned by Vishnu, but what's going to happen to me? This is not a good situation for me. Vrijasura is like, don't think about it. Oh, great hero. Go for it. Kill me. Ha ha. What's wrong with you? Indra's like, what's wrong with me? You're a devotee and you're preaching to me. You're giving me the mercy. And you're telling me to kill you. It's like, he's hesitating. So that's the position. It's very difficult. He's telling him, what's the problem? It's clear. This is your duty. You have the weapon. You've got the order. Now do it. Don't hesitate for a moment. You know, don't worry. In this shloka, he's saying, I'm not even morose. You don't have to feel bad. I'm happy. And the more he says that, then the less Indra feels like he wants to do it. So what kind of story is this? What kind of heroic leela of the killing of a demon? It just ruins it. The hero is on the mental platform. The demon's not really a bad guy. It all just is a mess. This isn't a normal story. You know, what kind of story is this? I want to hear a story where the good guy's killing the bad guy and I can relish it. But this is like, huh? What's going on here? It's like, sorry, no more stories for you, man. You want to hear a good story? Sorry. You want to enjoy and be a fool? Because, you know, I used to collect comic books when I was a child. I had a huge collection, the best comic books, and we later sold the collection for thousands of dollars. It was like really all the movies that are now out on these characters my brother and I, we were collecting and reading. And actually, when we would be immersed, I remember reading really good comic stories, the heroes and the bad guys, your consciousness becomes altered. You actually go into a different type of consciousness. It's like you leave your body. When you read really good stories, you leave your body, really well-written stories. Even like something like Jane Austen is like alters the consciousness. When you read well-written literature, it becomes like an intoxication. It's really like materially ecstatic. Because there's something called vicarious enjoyment. You know the word vicarious? It means you're living through something else. So when you read a really good hero story, you identify with the hero. That's what happens. It's you identify with the hero of the story. And it becomes intoxicating because you dream, oh, if it were I. Oh, how I would enjoy being a hero like that. Laying it down, defeating the bad guy, winning the hand of the beautiful princess. That's in the material world. That's the story. You are identifying with the hero. You're not thinking, oh, what a good hero. I hope he's blessed by the Lord for his devotional service and he gets all the good stuff. I'm just watching as a very insignificant observer. No. I thought that I was Captain America and Iron Man. I used to run around in my, you know, play the games. I didn't want to be the guy who, like, handed Captain America his shield. I wanted to be Captain America. That's what every young boy dreams, to be the hero. So that's the problem, material life. You want to be the center of attention and have all the worship and all the enjoyment and admiration. And here Indra is the hero, and Bhagavatam is like, no, no, it doesn't work like that. It's all messed up. It's all wrecked. So that's the ultimately, you can't vicariously enjoy the Bhagavatam as the hero. You have to the Bhagavatam smashes that, breaks it down, and says, you want to be happy? You want to fulfill your dream? Because of my exposure to comic books, when I was a child, if you would have come to me and said, what do you dream? You know, if I would have found, you know, if I would have entered a cave and found the magic lamp, and the genie would have said, what do you want? I would have wished for, I want to be Superman, you know? I want to fly. I want magic powers. I want to fly down and look at the citizens. And everyone look up and go, oh, there he is, it's Super Abai. Oh, he's so wonderful. And I fly down and go, what's the trouble here? The damsel in distress, I'll use my superpowers and blow the hurricane away. It's like, oh, amazing, he saved all those farmhouses, you know, in Kansas. Oh, my hero. But now, if I got a magic lamp and the genie came out and said, what would you like? I'd go, I'd like to stop being an idiot so I can be a devotee. Can you take away all my material desires? I want to go back to Godhead because I want to be happy. I want to love Krishna. So that's the virtue of Krishna consciousness. It changes the desire. I may not be very close. I'm like a dwarf wanting to touch the moon. But at least I know. I know where to go. And that's the beauty of the Bhagavatam. These stories don't bewilder us. They don't distract us. But they push us further, encourage us that, my friend, my brother, what you want is Krishna Prem. And that was what Marj Chitraketu got. He was so lucky. He was so happy. He's got his arms chopped off and he's bleeding and he's losing. And he's like, ha 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 ha. Yes, Haribol. Do it. Do it. Come on. He's exulting in loss and failure and defeat because he knows exactly where this is going. Krishna Prem. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Ghor Premanandi. Hari Bol.